Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Pneumaticos. I am your host, Dr. Josiah Rich, and this morning our topic is the cure for spiritual discontentment. And I'm going to be reading from 1 Samuel chapter 1. I'm going to be reading the narrative about the great saint Hannah. 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 1. There was a certain man from Ramathaim, a Ziphite from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives. One was called Hannah, and the other Hanina. Hanina had children, but Hannah had none. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh. For Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion, because he loved her, and the Lord had closed her womb. And because the Lord had closed her womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli, the priest, was sitting on the chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. And she made a vow, saying, O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant, that is your servant's misery, and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head." As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long will you keep on getting drunk? Get rid of your wine." "Not so, my lord," Hannah replied. "I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief." This story, that is, this narrative of Hannah, is a classic narrative on spiritual discontentment. I want you to please notice that Hannah, or that is, Hannah's husband is a godly man. Elkanah is a very godly and caring husband. This man's home is unusual in a sense in that he has two wives, that is Hannah and Peninnah. Hannah's name means grace. Peninnah's name means jewel. But it is a very interesting home because herein is the notice the environment. Peninnah has children, in verse, according to verse, but Hannah had none. Now, this is a home in which the husband is a believer, and ostensibly, Peninnah might be a believer, as it would seem, and Hannah is most certainly a believer in the Lord. And yet, a point of contention has arisen within this home of comprised of believers, over Peninnah's gift from God of children and Hannah's barrenness. Peninnah uses this against, that is, Peninnah uses Hannah's barrenness against her because Peninnah knows that her husband, that is, Elkanah, loves Hannah. And so this is the way Peninnah gets back at her husband, that is, through the object of his love, and that is Hannah. Now, even though Peninnah has borne her husband many children, he loves Hannah. It would seem, according to, I'm going to read verse 5, but to Hannah, he gave a double portion because he loved her, and the Lord had closed her womb. And so we are able to get a sense of what Hannah's emotional state is, and it is one of dysphoria. And dysphoria is defined as an emotional state characterized by anxiety, depression, or unease. And this most certainly describes Hannah's state. Verse 6, and because the Lord had closed her womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. Now, please notice the worldview, that is, the intrinsic Hebrew worldview. Never is the generic descriptor "it" is used in Hebrew culture. Since the Lord Yahweh is the creator, that is Yahweh Elohim, all causes of temporal and ultimate or final come from him. Now, there is no statement here, of course, about a medical condition that is the cause for Hannah's condition. It is most certainly the viewpoint of the writer that the Lord had closed her womb. And so there is a teleological aspect that the writer skillfully has woven into the text. Hana may be under the persecution of Penina, but the Lord has a purpose for her life. And because Hana is in a state of dysphoria, it may not feel at this time that God has a plan for her life. But she is going to go through this very personal, this very real, this very intense experience in order to learn something both about herself and about her God. Verse 6 once again, and because the Lord had closed her womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Now, it is also seen within the pages of the biblical documents that when God moves into the life of a particular individual for whom he has set aside for a specific purpose, there is also, it would seem, a one who is there to chafe, to persecute, to irritate, to vex, to create or to create discontentment within the life of the one whom God has chosen. Hannah's emotional reaction to Penina's constant persecution and provocation is to weep. Verse 7, this went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons, or a Hebrew euphemism for a lot of sons? Once, when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. Now notice where Hannah is. She is at the temple in Shiloh. She goes to the temple in order to bring her situation to God. Yes, that was the family ritual, the ritual of pilgrimage of going there every year. But this year was something different. Hannah took this opportunity in the midst of her grief-stricken heart to take her situation before the Lord. Notice verse 10, in bitterness of soul. The word bitterness there is an adverb. It is the Hebrew word mar. And the root, that is the root of this word, means a drop or flowing down. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. And so this state that her grief, her spiritual discontentment was her constant state. There was a constancy to her condition. And the most obvious symptom of her condition is given to us. Notice in verse 7. Her rival, at the end of verse 7, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. And so we are given some insight into what was going on with Hannah emotionally. What her soul was facing. What she ruminated over in her heart with the fact that she was unable, or she was barren, and she was being persecuted about a condition that she could not help. She was being persecuted about a condition that she could not change. She was being persecuted about a condition that was out of her hand. And so we get an insight into the personality of Penina, who, again, whose name is Jewel, but yet this Jewel, and I'm sure she presented herself to society at large as such, but indoors, behind closed doors, at home, and also on the family pilgrimage to this great religious event, she would persecute Hannah. And Hannah's reaction was to weep incessantly and not to eat. And so emotionally, we see what was going on in her heart. We get an insight into Hannah's affect. And we're able to witness her affect display. And we are certain that her facial, vocal, or gestural behavior served as an indication of her affect. And indeed, when the high priest saw her, his preemptive diagnosis was to say that she was drunk. So he had not spoken with her at any length or done any real investigation of what was going on with her. He said something about her character, said something about her behavior. So you're drunk, daughter. And she said, no. He said, no, I am not drunk. And so she explained to the high priest what was really going on with her. Verse 10, in bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. Now, there may have been in your experience an event that caused you bitterness of soul. That is the Hebraic, once again, the word bar, which means a drop or that which flows down. And you may have developed a mental attitude set. And the mental attitude sin, here the word sin means to miss the mark of God's holiness, to miss the mark of God's will for your life. And so this occurs when one takes his or her eyes off God and begins to develop bitterness or anger or resentment around an event. And the subjective interpretation of that event has created a negative or negative thought pattern. And you may believe that this reaction in some way is going to profit you, but instead, and counterintuitively, this reaction has created incredible discontentment, spiritual discontentment in your life, because the soul of the individual, the nefesh in the Hebrew, is not designed to carry that type of spiritual poison. One's life will become unbalanced and unstable. But I want you to notice something rich and wonderful about Hannah. Now, in the New Testament, James chapter 1, there's a very interesting word that's used, disukoi, or disukos, and I'm going to tell you what that word means here in a moment. And notice in verse 11 what Hannah does. And she made a vow, saying to the Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery, and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor, that is, he will be a Nazarite. One can read about the Nazarite vow in Numbers 6. No razor will ever be used on his head. Hannah has emotional discontent going on within her soul, but she is not an unstable person. In James chapter 1, this verse is found, James chapter 1, 8. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. And here the word is disukos. And here the context, it means a doubter, one who doubts God. But interestingly enough, the same word, disukos, is found in a plural form in James chapter 4, the same letter. In James 4, 8, the verse reads, draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your heart. Notice, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Here in this verse, the word is not disukos, meaning one or singular. It is disukoi, which is in the plural. And here it means unstable person. And why are they unstable? Well, they are unstable because their hearts are not cleansed. Their hearts are not pure. Hannah's condition is decidedly different in that her heart is clean. She is stable, but she is a believer who is suffering from grief. She is a grief-stricken believer. If her heart were unclean, she would most certainly have gone after Peninnah. She would have given her a piece of her mind, as it were. Amen? She would have let Peninnah know something about herself. And that would have been a normal reaction. She would have been motivated by revenge. And God does not want us to operate from the viewpoint of revenge motivation. That would have told us most poignantly that Hannah had mental attitude sin in her heart and in her life. The fact that she did not do this tells us that she was a grief-stricken believer, that is, her heart was broken out of or over her condition. She is a godly woman. She has answered her name, Grace. She has answered her name. Now, there are those who do not answer their name under grace, but who live futile and fruitless lives because their lives have discontentment. Now, in order to be free of discontentment, one must bring his situation or her situation to the Lord. One must go before God in confession of what has transpired and also confess in great detail one's interpretation of the situation that is believed to be the cause or the causal factor of the discontentment. Go back there. Do some heart searching, some soul searching, so that one can have an honest conversation with God. Hannah does this. She has an honest conversation with God. And within her grief-stricken heart, she makes a promise. She makes a vow. She said to the Lord that if you will give me a child or a son particularly, I will give him back to you. No razor will ever come upon his head, and all the days of his life he shall be given back to you. So she is asking God for a blessing. Hannah knows that she cannot go before the Lord with mental attitude, sin, and inner bitterness toward Penina or anyone else and expect to be heard of God. Hannah knows that her heart must be pure, that is, she must be cleansed, in order to be heard by God. Yes, her heart is in grief. She weeps, and she does not eat. And most certainly we shall see that she has not had a sexual relationship with her husband. So she has been cut off emotionally in many ways. She cannot respond to her husband sexually or emotionally at this time because of her broken heart. I want you to see that everything has the human condition, everything that has to do with us and what we face are built or embedded in these timeless narratives that we find within the biblical documents. They are most certainly filled with the knowledge that we need in order to live before God as we should. God has wonderfully left for us or given to us this legacy of the Holy Scriptures. And so on the next installment of Pneumatikos, we shall study more about the cure for spiritual discontentment. My name is Dr. Josiah Rich. I will speak with you next time on Pneumatikos. Have a wonderful day.